Glad to be back with you again this evening. If you want to go ahead and turn, we're going to be in Daniel chapter 1 this evening. Daniel chapter 1. We're going to be talking about one of my favorite, I guess you could call it a children's story. We're going to talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but first we're going to begin in Daniel chapter 1, laying some of the foundation for this story. I'm aware that I probably went a little long this morning. I'm going to try to give you a few minutes back tonight. We're going to do quite a bit of reading. We're going to try to let the Bible speak much more than me, and then I'll speak a little bit, and we'll try to take a couple of points out that we can incorporate into our lives about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But let's begin first in Daniel chapter 1, and let's begin reading in verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. Now here we can see a little bit of background about how these four young men came to be under Babylonian captivity. We can see that they were taken from their homes at a young age. They were commanded by Nebuchadnezzar, who told Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to go and take some of the youths, those who had good wisdom, those who understood learning, those who appeared nice, take them and teach them the way of the Chaldeans. So that's where they come. So let's turn over to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3. And let's pick up in verse 8. We're going to read quite a bit here. We're going to read most of the story, but we're going to read down through verse 23. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my God or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. That's an amazing story so far. We've not truly gotten to the amazing story. But what we see here is these three men, these three young men are taken out of their home, far away, away from their parents, away from their family, way out of their comfort zone. They're living with the people they do not know, who serve a God that they do not serve. And King Nebuchadnezzar builds a golden image. And he tells all the people of the land that when they hear the music playing from the many instruments, they're to bow down. They're to bow down and worship that golden image that he's made. Now Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they serve the one true God of heaven. And they knew that they were to serve no other gods. And so they refused. And some people came and let Nebuchadnezzar know that these three young men were not obeying his orders. And when he finds out, he threatens them with death. And these three young men stand up to this mighty king and tell him, "We will not do this. We serve the one true God of heaven, and we know that he can deliver us, and he may or he may not, but we will not bow down to your image." How did these young men establish such a fearless faith that they were able to withstand one of the mightiest men of that time, King Nebuchadnezzar? That's what I want to look at very briefly tonight. I want to look at how they were able to establish this faith, and certainly some things that we can establish into our lives to establish a similar faith. The first thing I think is that they had a foundational faith. We talked about that this morning, about building a foundational faith and then growing and progressing on that. That without that foundation, without that strong foundation, we're doomed to lose our faith. And it's very clear that these three young men had a foundational faith. How does that begin? Where does one get that? Romans 10 and verse 17 says that so faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. So they had heard, at some point, they had heard the instructions of God. Where would they have heard that? Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. I think we can find the answer. In Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning in verse 6. "And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." We see here the instructions of God to parents about how they're to teach their children. You're constantly to be surrounded by the words of God. I believe that's where the faith that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego began. It began at home with their parents. Their parents taught them about God. They surrounded them. Every time that they sat down, they talked about God. When they'd eat a meal, perhaps they'd talk about God. As they were going to bed, they'd tell them a story about days on before, about God and how he had taken care of the Israelites. That's where that foundational faith begins. These young men far away from home were able to do it because from a very early age they had been taught these things. That faith had been established in them. And we hear things today from parents like this about their older children. "I just don't know why they're not interested in church anymore. I just don't know why I can't get my kids to come to church with me anymore. I just don't know why they don't believe anymore." And it's gut-wrenching to hear parents talk about their children in this way. That somewhere along the way, their kids have lost the faith that they once had. But you know what we can do? We can go back and look at those children and look and see how they were instructed at a young age. A lot of times, unfortunately, premium wasn't placed on God's things. Unfortunately, a lot of times, children, a premium is placed on entertainment, on sports, on school, on anything but God. And then we're surprised when they grow older and they lose that faith. Because what have we done if we don't instruct our kids at a young age about how important the church is, about how important God is? What do we do when we skip services to take them to a ball game? What do we do when we hold them back from Wednesday night Bible study because they have homework to do? What are we showing them? We're teaching them that God is not the most important thing in our lives. If God were the most important thing in our lives, then He would win every time. But if we choose to do something other than assemble with the saints in worship, we're teaching our kids that God is not the most important thing. And if we do that, it should be no surprise that when they're older, they can make their own decisions and we can't drag them to church anymore. It should be no surprise that they lose their faith. Well, how do we do that? One, very simple. We teach them the Bible from a very early age. I'm talking 1, 2, 3. Before they can even really comprehend, we talk about Bible things with them. We don't wait until they're 10 years old to start sending them to Bible class, do we? Yes, we know that when they're 12 months old, 18 months old, maybe they're not fully grasping everything. But what we're doing is we're inoculating them with God's things. We're teaching them about God. We're teaching them about who created the universe, who sent His Son to die. And if we inoculate them with those things when they are very young, when we make that the norm, we establish what's most important in their lives. You know, a lot of these stories, not unlike Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we consider children's stories, don't we? Why do we consider them children's stories? Well, it's because they're fairly simple stories that is used to build that faith in that child, that it's easy for them to understand. Just, I guess it was 2014 at Expressway when we had our vacation Bible school. Each night it was a different kid story, a story that you'd consider to be a child story out of the Bible. But we didn't just teach those stories in the kids' classes. Every single one of the classrooms, up through high school and in the auditorium, everyone studied these same stories because just because we consider it a child story does not mean that there's not biblical principles in there that we need to apply to our lives. And in fact, faith and learning and building and growing your faith is not unlike a lot of other things in our lives. No one expects a 7-year-old child to learn how to do and know how to do complex calculus problems, do we? We don't expect to put something before them and go, well, you should know how to do this. You're 7 years old. We don't expect that. But we would expect them to know how to do simple addition, right? Because that's appropriate for their age level. Well, it's the same way we wouldn't expect a 7-year-old to be able to explain blasphemy of the Holy Spirit or the baptism for the dead. We wouldn't expect them to be able to understand that, but we would expect them to know who created the world and maybe the order that He created and the things that He made. We would expect a child to learn that and understand that. You see, it begins with these small incremental improvements that if we continue to make over time, we build on them until one day, hopefully, we have the same kind of faith that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had. But it starts with the little things. It starts with our children. It starts with teaching them biblical principles early on and consistently so that when they are in their 20s and 30s and 40s, that faith lives on in them. Let's turn over to Daniel chapter 3 again. And let's look at verse 16. Because secondly, what they had was, these men had no fear of death, which is an unusual thing, because to us, death is a very scary thing. But these men looked death in the eye. And we can see that in verse 16, where they said, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, keep in mind, this is the king. This is a very powerful man who could have them killed just like that. And they say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer to you in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning furnace, and He will deliver us out of your hand. But if not, Be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your God or worship the golden image that you have set up. These men very clearly understood what was expected of them and what the consequences would be if they didn't comply. He made it very clear. Bow down to this golden image or I will kill you. Bow down or die. And these young men looked at this very powerful man and said, we don't have to answer you in this. We don't answer to you. We serve the God of heaven. And he will take care of us. Why are people scared to death? Why is it a scary thing for us? Some might say, because it's painful. Death hurts. And I would say, very often today, death doesn't hurt. We're so far technologically advanced that doctors can ease people's suffering so that death is painless. And even in what we would consider a violent death, a shooting or a car accident, oftentimes that's so quick that the pain may not even be felt. So I don't know that it's the pain of death that we fear. Some might say it's because of the unknown. We fear it because we don't know what happens. You could ask 100 different people what happens when you die, and you may get 100 different answers. But we as Christians, we understand what happens after death, don't we? We understand that there are two possible outcomes. If we've lived our life in line with what Christ has set forth in the New Testament, then we know we have to look forward to a home in heaven eternally. And we know if we have not kept those principles, we have not lived the way that the Bible outlines that we should, we know that eternal damnation is waiting for us. So I'm not sure that it's the unknown either. I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's fear of separation. I think that's what we fear about death. I think it's fear of separation of this world, separation from our families, separation from our friends, our homes, our jobs, our possessions. I think this is why the love of money is considered the root of all evil. We get too caught up in the here and now. We get too caught up in things, in possessions. And what does that do? It ties us to that earth, to this earth. When we're so concerned about the things that we have, when we're so concerned about physical things, it ties us to here. It ties us to this earth. And we know that our time here is short. That eternity is what we're looking to. But when we get too bogged down, when we get too connected to the things on this earth, that makes us fear death because we'll be separated from the things that we've tied ourselves to. That's why I think people are scared of death. Could you face certain death and hold your faith? Be honest with yourself. Could you experience something like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where death is certain if you don't give the right answer, and keep your faith? It may happen to us. It may happen to you. We need to be prepared to handle something like that. It begins with that foundational faith. That's what leads us to a fearless faith like that. Matthew Henry has a great quote, I think. He says, a steadfast, self-denying adherence to God and duty, in less circumstances, will qualify and prepare us for the like and greater. Which is really just a fancy way of saying, if you're faithful in the little things, then you'll be faithful in the big things. Which is a principle that he gets from Luke 16, verse 10. The parable that Jesus says. And he says, if you are faithful in a few things, I will make you faithful over big things. And likewise, the inverse is true, isn't it? If you are unfaithful in little things, then you'll be unfaithful in big things. It's just like his children, starting with the little things, with the Bible stories and building. We need to be faithful in the small things first and build. And as we build and as we use those building blocks and our faith grows and grows and we're faithful in bigger things and bigger things and bigger things, we will develop a faith like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which is able to look death in the eye and deny it. We must first be faithful in the little things. You see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego understood that denying God just a little was to deny God altogether. Because what's interesting about what Nebuchadnezzar asked them, he doesn't ask them to forsake their God, to stop serving their God, does he? He simply is asking them to include one more. This God that I've made. You can still serve your God, but I just ask that you include this one in your list of gods that you worship. But to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, adding one God was as good as removing the one true God. You see, that's how compromise works. Because compromise doesn't just end, does it? It begins with something very small and leads to much larger things. Someone may say, I'm not asking you to stop going to church. I'm just saying, you don't need to go this Sunday, do you? We can hang out and do something. Don't abandon your worship altogether, but just this one time. Just compromise today. I'm not asking you to become an alcoholic. Just have a drink with me after work. I'm not asking you to become a career criminal. Just take that Snickers bar and stick it in your pocket and walk out. That compromise starts with little things that begin to lead to bigger and bigger things. It's the same concept that we've talked about with our faith, that we build our faith little by little. Well, when we begin compromising our faith, when we begin compromising God with little things, we'll continue to compromise Him in bigger and bigger things. And the funny thing about compromise is it never only affects one aspect of your life, does it? Once you begin to compromise something, it infects all of your life. You may compromise something about your work, but do you think that you can contain that to just your work? You may compromise your marriage with infidelity. Do you think it will only stay there? See, we think that we can compartmentalize our sin and that it will just stay in this one area. But it doesn't, does it? That's why we have to be so diligent not to compromise at all. And to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, death wasn't a separation necessarily. It was a homecoming. They were glad to die because they knew where they were headed. They didn't know if God would save them, but they knew that He could. And that was enough for them. They knew that God could either deliver them from the furnace, or He could deliver them by the furnace. And finally, what's really amazing is that these gentlemen, they truly lived a sacrificial lifestyle and an exemplary lifestyle. Because what do we see in Daniel chapter 3 in verse 24? Daniel chapter 3 and verse 24, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, 'Did we not cast three men bound into the fire?' They answered and said to the king, 'True, O king.' He answered and said, 'But I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods.' Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here.' Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, 'Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and delivered His servants, who trusted in Him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree: any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. The belief that these three young men had in the face of death had a profound effect on King Nebuchadnezzar. It caused him to believe. The actions of these men, how far they were willing to go, the faith they displayed by defying his orders, even upon the threat of death, that had a profound effect on Nebuchadnezzar because of what these three young men refused to do. We have that same sort of power. We are able to use our faith to show people the true God. You see, what we won't do doesn't go unnoticed. The things that we don't do because of who we are, because of the God that we serve, in a world that's so worldly, that's so wrapped up in serving themselves, doing whatever they want to do, people who show restraint, people who don't do certain things, people who don't use foul language at work, people who don't drink, who don't smoke, those people stand out in the world, don't they? Because those things are so common in our world. To see someone who refuses to do those things raises a brow sometimes. People look at us and wonder, what's wrong with us? Why are you so different? And we ought to be ready when those opportunities come along where people ask us why we won't do these things. But that's not enough, is it? We talked about this morning in Luke 11 about the spirit who leaves that house, but because it's left empty, we talked about it's not good enough just to not do something. Yes, that's a starting point, to not do something. But what we need to be doing is we need to be doing something. We need to be doing good things. We need to be setting examples for our neighbors, our friends, our coworkers. What we will do explains who we are. Why do we respect our boss even when nobody likes him? People think he's incompetent. He's got a terrible personality. Nobody in the office respects him. But you do. Why? Why do you respect that man who nobody else does? Why are you the first to write a card when a coworker's wife gets cancer? Or take food to their house? Why do you do that? Why do you stay and work 2 hours late on Tuesday so that you can leave early Wednesday to make Bible study? Why do you work hard all the time, not just when the boss is looking? See, those are the things that we do differently than the world. Those are opportunities for our faith to shine, for us to show people why we're different. And use that as an opportunity to talk about the gospel with them. There may come a time when something as simple as these examples can begin a conversation. But none of them are quite as big as what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. They withstood death to the face. They were willing to die for their Lord. They knew he could save them, but they didn't know if he would. And it didn't really matter to them, did it? That's a really powerful faith. To know you could die and to refuse to give in. That's a faith that I'm working towards. That's the kind of faith that I want to hold. To be able to look death in the eye. Well, I hope this was beneficial for you. I hope you got something out of this. Because I know I did. I know when I studied for this lesson, I read this story about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It steps all over my toes, up my legs, gets me in the knees. I see these young men and the faith that they displayed. And I have to ask myself, do I have that faith? And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I always do. I don't know if my faith is always that strong. I'll tell you what, my resolve to work this year to increase my faith to where it is that strong, I do have that resolve. I am confident of that. I realize I'm human, I have limitations, and I fall short. But my resolve to gain that kind of faith is as strong as it's ever been. And I hope it is for you too. I hope you resolve to work on your resolutions this year, to work on the things that you've set about, to become closer to God, to save more souls. I hope that you've resolved that tonight. You know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego stared death and defied Nebuchadnezzar's orders because they knew that though they may face death, they had life. And most of us in that room have that same hope this evening, that we know though we may die, we will still live. Unfortunately, there's probably some here in this room tonight who face the death like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did, but a far worse death. You see, they would have simply lost their lives had they died in that fire. If you have not put on Christ in baptism and you die tonight, you would not only lose your life, but you would lose your soul. You have an opportunity right now, as we sing this invitation song, to think about the state of your affairs with Jesus and about where you would go if you were to die this very evening. If we can do anything for you, we'd ask that you'd please come now as we stand and sing.